Dr. Michael Rice has been synthesizing spiritual and intellectual principles leading to a clarity for living a healthy, loving life for over 50 years, diving into body-mind connections, physics, and ancient Aramaic studies definitely puts him on the path of unity. Michael's great, so stick around. This is Robin with Tributaries. Michael, there are certain indicators that perception represents the past. So what do you do with this?
Well, if you start out and recognize that, number one, our eyes do not see. The eye is an energy receiver. Pardon me, it receives light frequencies. Literally, we know that. And those energies come in and are delivered to the brain, to the mind. And in response, the mind generates a construct that we call perception. So the eye is a one-way valve. You can't see out of it any more than you could look inside the wires on your TV and see out through the antenna what's happening in the neighborhood. So the brain generates literally the world that we see based on its content. And in fact, there's an interesting piece of research that was done by the CIA. There's a book on their website you can download free, or you can download it from our website. We put it on our site because they kept moving it around on theirs. It's called The Study of Human Intelligence. And in that book, one of the chapters is the study of perception and how it works. And quote, here's what the CIA says after spending who knows how many millions. Perception is demonstrably an active rather than a passive process. It constructs rather than records reality. Perception is a process of inference in which people construct their own version of reality on the basis of information provided through the five senses. So our eyes, we've been brainwashed, we've been taught we're seeing what's going on out there. Nobody's ever seen anything with their eyes. Nobody ever will see anything with their eyes.
Right. Yes, and
what happens is light enters and the brain generates the whole world that we think we see based on the interaction of the energies coming in and the content of the mind.
Yes, and I laughed when I saw that you called the mind a perception-reducing valve. And yet, I understand
yes.
This is no laughing matter, of course, in the moment that it's happening. You write and cite that the biggest loss here is losing the presence of love, which is basically losing our life. So how can you speak to this a little bit in sharing ways to jump out of that?
Some interesting Harvard research that says that in the time frame where they can measure 10,000 units of electrical activity in the brain, and this is actually one of the most quoted pieces of research. It's over half a century old. One of the most quoted pieces of psychological research in psychological history. And what they've shown is that 10,000 measurable units of electrical activity are happening. And the max amount of data that goes into the construct of the mind, perception, is 9 bits of data. Little tiny, tiny piece of information shows up as the construct. And so the mind is a gating device that cuts out what doesn't fit with our goals of the moment. There's another interesting piece of research where they have a cat and they implant electrodes in the cat's brain in the area where the brain responds to sound. And they hook those electrodes up to an oscilloscope. And they have a clicking device, and they put it in the cat's ear, and they click it. And, of course, the oscilloscope goes pop. You see the signal. They click it again, signal. The oscilloscope goes quiet. Click it again, signal. Then they put a mouse in a bell jar in front of the cat. They can click that clicker till the cows come home. Nothing shows up in the brain. It's gated out. The things that people don't want to feel, don't want to look at, and don't want to deal with are gated out of perception. And the main way that they're gated out is through denial. Now, not denial in the traditional sense of I'm pretending something doesn't exist that does, but rather in this work that I've developed, there's a specific definition we have of denial, and that is whenever I think or speak as though something outside of me is the cause of what's happening inside of me. You know, the classic example is you made me mad, you made me sad, they made me afraid, that really scared me. Whenever I think or speak as though something outside of me is the cause of what's moving in me, I'm in denial. And when I go into denial, in order for my brain to produce a construct that is in alignment with my beliefs, I have to gate out all of the information in me that shows me that I've been through this particular painful process 87 different times with 42 different people, and I'm the only one that was there every time. It's about me. All of that's gated out, and the mind generates a construct that's consistent with the denial. And so people dissociate from the content of their own minds. And, you know, my take is it is not natural for a human being to have an unconscious mind. It's something we've artificially created through denial. And if you talk to the average psychologist today, they'll tell you that 80, 90, perhaps as much as 98% of our thought processes are unconscious. And when you realize that we're creative beings, if our thought processes are unconscious, and I'd offer it is through our thoughts that we create, that we set up, that we resonate, that we bring experiences into our lives, if we're doing 98% of it or even 10% of it on the unconscious level, we're going to have difficulty. What the solution to that dilemma is that, or at least in the ancient teachings, the solution that was given to that dilemma, the way of opening the dissociated mind and removing the pained content that we don't want to look at, was called forgiveness. Now, the Greeks turned that totally around. In the ancient Aramaic language, the word forgive means a tool with which you go inside your own unconscious and you delete the information that's at the root of your pain, the information, the energetic patterns that never belonged there. That's forgiveness. The Greeks turned it into, oh, you made me mad. Now we're in denial. And now I dissociate from the cause in me of my mad or my angry. And then I do an interesting thing. I will then project it into my brain's image of whoever I'm blaming it on. You know, there's a lot of conversation in the world today about the fear of the satanic one-world religion that's coming. And the people who live in that fear have no idea that the one-world religion has been around for thousands of years. It's called the religion of blame. And it literally causes the mind to malfunction. Most people live in a state where they're dissociated from the root of the pain that's perhaps been going on in their bloodline for generations and generations. Once one starts to apply forgiveness, the compressed or dissociated energies that people didn't want to deal with now start to come up. And when they come up, although they're painful and it can be a challenge to do, they can throw them out of their structures. They can get rid of them. And that's what was called forgiveness in the ancient Aramaic language. When you go back to that language 2,000 years ago, the man Yeshua, who's classically called Jesus in this culture, but that was not his name, if he sat in most places today that ostensibly talk about him, he'd say, that's all Greek to me, because the Greeks have turned so much of it backward.
Yes.
So the root of the work that I do is, how do we get back on track with the truth? And yeah, we actually have the world's only forgiveness app available. It's free in the app stores, and it shows how to reverse that process of denial, how to collapse the world of false perception, the false outputs of the mind. And there's a really simple way to tell if you're in false perception. If hostility or fear is moving in you, then your mind is using corrupt data to produce literally the construct, the perceptual construct, the world that you see. You can't collapse that. If you don't know how to collapse that, you're in trouble.
Right. But the first step, once we recognize that, once we know that and we can recognize it, then we have the capability of not going down all these lifelong rabbit holes, right? And, you know, there's so much talk about, oh, well, don't take anything personally and everything. And yet, if that's where everything is stemming from without recognizing that, there kind of is no hope. But, you know, my initial meeting with you, which, you know, we have never met in person, but we've been speaking literally for years now. And I certainly appreciate...
It's got to be close to 20, right?
I think so, yes. And I certainly appreciate you stay busy, not only with your grandchildren, as we were speaking earlier, but you so keep up with everything because there are so many lines leading to the same end now, and they are being brought out. I don't want to move off of this fear and hostility being our first clue, or not first perhaps, but a very obvious clue about, oh, okay, boom, I recognize that. So what's next? How do you see the next first step?
Well, first of all, as you say what you're saying, it's really been, you know, impinging on my awareness just the last year or two. You know, I've developed this body of work on the under the title of Why Is This Happening to Me Again? And
yes,
people can download my book free from our website for just over 50 years now. And in the last 2 years, you know, when you realize what it takes to put all the pieces together, one of my doctorates is in holistic philosophy. And it's kind of like more and more I'm realizing that I know nothing. I've just scratched the surface of it. You know, this new telescope that's out there has shown us, like, you know, universes beyond what we've ever conceived could possibly exist. And I believe that our human organism is designed to be able to comprehend all of that, to interact on an intelligent level with all of that. But most are still hanging out. What was it? Who was it that wrote, most men lead lives of quiet desperation? And they're still dealing with perceptual constructs that are from ancient traumas. And because they refuse to feel and deal with their hostility or fear honestly, they're living out of those, the corrupt data of those hostility and fear-based constructs, and they supplant the actuality of the moment, the truth of what's going on, with these constructs from the mind, and they think that what they're looking at is actually going on outside of them. You know, if you've ever had anybody, you know, a question I'll often kind of tongue-in-cheek ask an audience is, have you ever had somebody accuse you of doing something you absolutely never did or saying something you absolutely never said? And of course, everybody kind of laughs and puts their hand up. So now think about a time or a number of times when that's happened and notice that every time that kind of accusations come into your life, the person who's accusing you has been in some form of hostility or fear.
So
now,
true.
Most people go, that's true. Yeah, when Bill did it, when Harry did it, when Hortense did it, yeah, that's the state that we're in. Now, the leap that needs to be made is to recognize, if my mind's in hostility or fear, I'm the one who's trapped in a lie. I need to own that this is false perception.
Yes.
And most people live in perception, not the actual world as it's available to us.
Yes. And so speaking of the mind as a reducing valve, losing all sense of personalization, that in itself creates so many limits. And it's funny because, you know, we'll look up and we'll go, oh, there's the moon or the sun. And I've never said, oh, there's my moon or my sun, you know, and yet at certain levels, we want to bring everything into my this or my that. And that also creates the limitation.
Yes. Well, if you go back again into the ancient Aramaic language, you hear this man, Yeshua, and he says, in order for you to live, you've got to die. It's like, wait a minute, that doesn't make any sense. until you recognize that perception also generates an image of self that is false. It's an image for most people, and this is what runs the world, that's based on the power person dynamics in their lives. And because of the errant messages delivered by one's power person, that those messages coagulate into an image of who we think we are. And the first message, and we're designed to live, my offering is we're designed to live in enthusiasm. There's a chart on my website called The Physiological Effects of Emotional Suppression. And we all start out in exactly the same way, enthusiasm. In theos literally means in God. It means in, you know, you look at that little kid and they keep coming back with enthusiasm.
Yes.
And once they buy into the errant message from a power person, and the first power person message that breaks the connection to love and enthusiasm for most people is, you're broken. There's something wrong with you. Mm. And that, when it's accepted, and my definition, we do a workshop called Codependence to Interdependence, and my definition of a power person is that, well, three things happen to install a power person dynamic in someone's mind. One, the power person has more power over, it's usually a parent with a child, though not always, has more power over the child's life than the child does. Two, the parent, the power person, is not functioning out of love. And three, the child perceives the circumstance as survival. When that happens, energetically, when you think of the child as an energy system, the child's energy system opens wide. It's in survival. It opens wide. And literally, it acts like a sponge that just absorbs every energy that's in the environment. So if the power person is raging, the child just sucks that rage in, and it becomes part of the foundation of their image of who they are. And in particular, it becomes the driver for their future behavior. Once a power person dynamic is installed in a mind, until that power person dynamic is understood, recognized, and removed, it runs every behavior that a person does. And I just invite everybody to take a look. There are only three behaviors possible when under the influence of the power person dynamic. And the behavior that will run a person's life will depend upon the level of stress they're under at any given moment. When there's little or no stress, I just invite everybody to take a look at your life and see if this fits for you. When there's no stress, there's a thing called the automatic decision system in the mind that kicks in, and we will do whatever we did to get along with our power person. When stress starts to build, that behavior will change and will kick into doing whatever we did to resist and survive with our power person. And then when we become ultra stressed, we'll do what our power person did to us that we hated the most. And that runs the world. I don't care whether it's religion or government or business or family, community, that dynamic runs the world.
Yes.
Virtually every person is under influence of their power person dynamic. Some can resist it, but it runs the world.
Yes, and I appreciate your work so much, Michael, in that you've been able to make so many great distillations from observing and experiencing as well. I mean, none of us have escaped this. Many of us have learned and are moving in a direction and able to make some shifts, but ultimately we've all had to move into, and hopefully we're all moving out of that as well. And Michael, to quote you, secrets are not hidden in the mind. They are hidden by the mind. And I love that today there's a myriad of vantage points available to us to discover this. And certainly you've been busy and you've looked at many of these. And I'm wondering if you would talk some about love's properties being physiological, emotional, and spiritual, because, you know, I know you talk about all of that in rearranging mindset and getting back to or toward that ultimate place of love and being loving?
Well, one of the first questions that needs to be answered in that, and just have that dialogue for me is, and everybody asks the question, I've heard this thousands of times, well, what are you talking about when you're talking about love? And it's amazing how many people just go, I don't have a clue what that even means. And in my awareness, there aren't enough words in any language on the planet to define what love is, but there is a very powerful experiential definition. And we were talking before the show of, you having your children. Do you remember when you first held your first newborn?
Sure.
If you go back to the moment of holding that newborn and you tap into his or her essence, what word would you use to describe the essence of that child?
Well, love seems to come to mind, because is there a word or anything that can really verbalize what that is, right?
Nothing big enough.
Right. It's like using the word God.
But it does give us an experiential definition.
Yes.
And that's a question I've asked of tens of thousands of people over the years, all over the globe in all kinds of cultures. And everybody's answer is always some variation on the theme of love.
Right. I mean, now, is love a verb or a noun?
Well, that was my next point, is then I'll ask people, so is the newborn loving you or is the newborn love? And everybody goes, well, of course the newborn is love. Isn't it interesting that we live in a culture that specializes in knocking that experience out of us, and then at, a given age, sends us out the door to find somebody to love, or somebody to love us. So now we take a state of being, we detach people from that experience with those messages about being broken and such, and then we teach them that it's something they're going to get from somebody else or something they're going to do to somebody else. And they're now trapped in a totally false definition of love. You know, it's interesting. Vladimir Lenin, the man who's probably responsible for more deaths on planet Earth than any human being in history, says the way you destroy a culture is change the meaning of its words. And so when we lose the experience of ourselves as the presence of love, the mind then creates a false replacement. It's been called ego, E-G-O. And if you think of the definition of God as love, edging God out, E-G-O, ego, that's the self Yeshua was talking about that has to die. And it dies through forgiveness. It dies through removing the errant power person messages that never belonged in us in the first place.
Right. So is that where you move into that Aramaic forgiveness and
exactly.
Go to work? Yeah.
Exactly. And people can go to their app store on their phone and just type in the words Heartland, H-E-A-R-T-L-A-N-D, Aramaic, A-R-A-M-A-I-C, forgiveness. And they'll be looking at the world's only forgiveness app. It's free. It's totally private. We specifically designed it so that it only requires one permission. Doesn't want to use your camera or send text or control your, make phone. There's one permission. That is the ability to use the internet. And there are two different versions of the worksheet for how do you forgive. And anywhere within the app on every page, there's a link where you can just click step 3 doesn't make any sense to me. Click, send us the question. 5 days a week from 1 till 2 o'clock, we do a radio show called Mind Shifters Radio, 1 o'clock Eastern Time. We'll read your question on the show, answer it, and then send you back a link to the show so you can listen to the answer. And, or, of course, people can call 5 days a week, again, from 1 till 2 o'clock Eastern Time, and listen to the show, ask questions directly, and basically most people, because, most everybody's got unlimited long distance these days, it's an internet show, but they just call into it on their phone, and the call-in number is 563-999-3581, and we're there to support people understanding and making the shift into a kind of thinking just that just isn't common in the world. So we're there to support process, answer questions. The app is there to give people access to all of the tools. And our website is whyagain.org. And if somebody goes there and in the upper left-hand corner is a link that says start here, everything's explained and it just unfolds what we've developed over the last 50 years. It'll point to the website's fairly complex. It's over 20,000 pages. So there's actually a short video at the end of that start here link that will explain to people how to use the website. And there's also a short video on how to use the app. And, you know, we do everything we can to empower people to get a correct understanding of forgiveness, how to go inside and remove those power person dynamics, how to go inside and remove the internal experience of hostility or fear, and start to literally live as that presence of love that we all started out as.
In support of people who maybe don't have a smartphone and do apps on their phone, can they get that information from your website?
You can download the worksheet itself, and there's a special area of archives, and there are at least 20 radio shows where we've walked somebody step by step through the whole worksheet process, the how-to of forgiveness.
Beautiful.
And it gives instructions for here's how to turn the perceptual constructs of the mind around so that they're based in, fueled by love, literally on a physiological level. People who are given those power person messages of hostility and fear tend to get stuck in a state of sympathetic dominance, fear, flight, fright, freeze, fawning. And until one shifts out of that sympathetic dominance into a parasympathetic state, rest, digest, and regeneration is virtually impossible because the blood flow is shunted to survival and it's shunted away from those higher functions, including higher cortical function in the mind.
Right.
And so by shifting out of, and that's one of the things forgiveness does, by shifting out of that hostility and fear-based mode physiologically, the autonomic nervous system shifts into parasympathetic mode, and all of a sudden the blood flow starts to move in the direction of higher centers of the brain. It moves in the direction of regeneration and healing, digestion and reproduction.
And speaking about regeneration, why don't we finish with a comment that you write about from Jonas Salk saying, the most important thing you can be is a good ancestor.
I thank Jonas Salk for that so often. And a good ancestor works on cleaning up their genetic history. And that's what forgiveness does.
Dr. Michael Rice can be found in many places, but start at whyagain.org. For anything tributaries related, it's tributariesradio.wordpress.com. We're podcasting, hopefully, on your favorite place, but if not, please let us know. I'm Robin Clare. Thanks for staying tuned.